Hey Mark here. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up. This is one of the most fun episodes I've ever recorded. We brought in Adam Hodgins, Megan Hoffmeyer, and it is extremely fun. I mean, we talk about Hobbs and Shaw for 1 hour and 40 minutes. We come up with some really random stuff. We have a lot of fun. However, there are some technical issues going on with this episode. It doesn't sound perfect. However, the content is A plus. So enjoy the episode. We're sorry for the technical difficulties, but I think if you're a fan of Hobbs and Shaw or the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast, this is probably the most Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast episode you're ever going to hear, except for the technical difficulties. We normally sound great. But thank you so much. Enjoy the episode, and we're sorry. To Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me are the crime-fighting duo known as Mo and Hodge. It's Megan Hoffmeyer and Adam Hodgins.
I love it.
Never been happier to be compared to glue in my life.
Hodgepodge is very useful.
I mean, Hodge and Hobbs, right? Makes sense. It works.
I'm all about the hodgepodge.
So, are we the sort of crime-fighting duo? Are we like the boys' crew? Are we super famous, or are we on the more low-key side of things? Can I demand a logo and some swag?
Yeah, I mean, you guys, you have, like, you're known as Mo and Hodge. Like, you have your bits.
Okay. Like,
you know,
I'm like, on board.
So,
yeah.
Now, if you two are kind of the equivalent of Hobbs and Shaw, which character am I from this movie?
Ryan Reynolds. 100% Ryan Reynolds.
Yes! Woo! Lock.
All you want in your life is to be me, Mark.
Down to the facial hair and glasses
see,
right now.
But see, listen, at the end, in the stinger of this, he murders about 75 mercenaries, and he's still alive. So he's clearly very capable, and he loves busting the chops of hot. Like, you know, there's a scene, though, where at the end of the diner, when Ryan Reynolds, who flew in for one day to do all of this, which is amazing, he flew in while working on Underground 6?
Six Underground.
So he flew in for one day. But at the end, Hobbs is like, thank you, brother. And then when they're on the phone, once again, Hobbs goes, thank you, brother. So Hobbs likes Locke. He just thinks right. Locke, like, Hobbs would trust Locke to get his back. He just hates being around him.
I can understand that in some people.
Yeah.
I mean, Locke is a bit obsessed with Hobbs.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure that could get old.
I mean, listen, I have a mohawk now like Adam. I play the guitar like Adam.
And the cat. Have a mohawk. Right?
I listen to these podcasts. The cats have. I listen to these podcasts over and over. The episodes that Adam and I do, and I've learned how to use a cadence similar to Adam.
That's
so
good.
I mean, it's crushing it. Whenever I see whatever photos you put up on social media, I copy the same photos. It's pretty great.
Imagine that. Like, imagine that was a real thing where you would just take my photos and repost them as yours.
Yeah. Put my face on it.
So you're single white mailing him.
Yep.
That is the next Netflix movie, Single White Male.
ours would be Mountain Burger, not Catfish.
Oh.
Right.
I'd Mountain Burgered you.
Mountain Burgered me. And it'd be like, you're not on my softball team, Mark. You gotta stop this.
I like this idea that you've developed the same cadence as him. I saw an article on Atlas Obscura yesterday that was saying in times where people are in isolation, new accents are developed. Because they just talk amongst their own little groups of people and new accents develop. So I thought that was very interesting.
I was out the other day and, you know, I was safe. I was keeping distance. I had a mask and all that. And I was talking and someone went, oh, are you from Canada? Are you from like just outside of Toronto? And I was like, yeah, like that's, you know,
just
you got
outside
me.
Outside of Toronto is
I
my
get
favorite.
That all the time.
Like, are you like kind of, do you have that kind, you have that dialect where it's not exactly Toronto, but it's in the surrounding areas. And when I say surrounding areas, I loosely say surrounding areas because it could be 1 hour to 4 hours. Who knows?
It's called the Greater Toronto Area.
Yeah. So you're part of the great. And I went, you know, thank you. And that's exactly what it is. And so
you got that GTA accent down.
Yeah. I knew it. Like I feel when I went to Toronto and I hung out with you and John and Louie and we all hung out, I felt like I was an honorary Torontonian. And now it's
that's
official.
That's what we try to make you feel every time.
Oh, yeah. You guys are great.
Very
I want to go back. I miss hanging. Like, that was my favorite con experience, hanging out with you guys, chilling.
That's a great city. We need to go back.
So.
Yes, you do.
Now, I have a quick question for you. And Megan, sorry about this, but we have an icebreaker episode, Megan, where it's Sean Astin battles Bruce Campbell on a mountain.
Okay. Oh, icebreaker. So I thought you were talking about
An icebreaker.
The type of games to break play. Between us. And then I put together that it was a movie.
So who wins? Brixton, aka Black Superman, Idris Elba, or Sean Astin's character from Icebreaker?
Oh, my heart says Sean Astin's character, but Black Superman is Black Superman.
How long would that fight last?
Oh, it almost would be a conversation. It's like Ryan Reynolds is like, oh, also, he killed this guy. Like, he wouldn't even have any screen time.
Yeah, he ripped the guy's throat out.
Yeah, he'd go full Roadhouse on him.
But remember, Black Superman is also Turn Up Charlie. So,
yeah, which we love. We love Turn Up Charlie with Idris.
Not sure if that makes him more or less defeatable.
There's a guy in Turn Up Charlie, and we see him in a lot of stuff, and then we just go, Turn Up Charlie! All right, now, since this is like a David Leitch movie who originally directed the John Wick movies, he was a massive stunt career. He worked on, he was a Brad Pitt stunt double in Fight Club. He's the guy who jumped over the fence to get the soap.
Right.
The soup. What would that be? Digital. So he got the soup, then he...
What movie do you think Fight Club is, Mark?
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of a movie where a person is in a vat of soup, because that doesn't sound terrible.
I mean, I would fight over a vat of soup, so that's Fight Club 2. Lobster Fight Brisk. Club 2. Chicken Noodle Brawl.
Chicken Noodle Brawl. That's good.
All right, so since, you know, he directed this, he was a stunt guy on Matrix, I mean, good friends with Keanu Reeves, and then after John Wick, he went to Atomic Blonde. And then he went to Deadpool 2. And since this movie, Hobbs and Shaw, stars Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham, Idris Elba, Ryan Reynolds, who was in Deadpool 2, makes an appearance. Even Agent Loeb, who was in Deadpool 2 as... Oh, man, I'm drawing a blank right here on who that... The human guy in Deadpool 2 that gets fuzzy bear.
Yeah. Bill, whatever his name is.
Yeah, so he's in there. Like, he's back in this movie. Since he brings in a lot of people... I wanted to bust a surprise draft on you and Megan.
Oh, no.
And when you listen to this, go to Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook.
Yes.
And the day after this episode comes out, I will put this poll up and you can vote on it. So, here's the matchup. Here's the draft. Statham's in this movie. Dwayne Johnson's in this movie. But we're going to do an Eddie Marson draft. Eddie Marson was in Atomic Blonde and died. Eddie Marson was in Deadpool 2 and died. Eddie Marson was in Hobbs and Shaw and dies. David Leitch loves bringing Eddie Marson in because Eddie is just a really professional actor and he's just good at whatever he does. So he's really quick. He doesn't have to worry about him. So since I just busted this on you guys, I'm going to give Megan the first pick.
Is it TV and movies?
No, only just... movies.
Dang it, Mark. The Gentleman, because we just watched that and he's so fun in that because he's so out of his normal character.
Oh, yeah.
He's boisterous.
I love The Gentleman.
Hilarious.
Yeah, and he has a gross scene, but I'm not going to tell anybody. So, Adam, what do you got?
He's got a gross scene.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Gangs of New York.
Whoa.
Just go hard. Like, I'm not pointing any punches here.
You're Bill the Butcher in here.
Yeah.
All right, Megster.
I'm going to go Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh.
So, Mark did this to me on a podcast, and now it's my... I have to do it. Because I felt so scandalized by him doing that.
It is a bit like, it's a very like rough, mean playground rules, right? Or it's like, yeah, it's pretty brutal. All right, are you ready for this? I'm gonna go Beowulf and Grendel.
What? That's old school right there. All right, so Meg, your third pick.
Ooh, I'm gonna say The World's End because the poster is right behind
us. Yeah, it's right behind us. That's a dirty pick.
I'm gonna pick this one just because it was the movie. I gotta qualify this. This is the movie I was most surprised by with, like, you know, the old rule of expectations, low expectations, and a mediocre movie is a great experience. Yeah. Jack the Giant Slayer.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's fun.
Love that.
Ewan McGregor's hair.
Yeah, I didn't think that movie was gonna be anything, and I came out like super entertained.
Great hair in that movie.
Yes.
All right, Meg, sir, fourth pick.
Gonna say V for Vendetta.
Whoa.
I love that movie. You know, I used to watch that in college. It was one of those things that came on, I don't know if it was HBO or just late night TV, because in college, for some reason, as a perk of your apartment, they give you all the channels. But but it would always
what
come on.
What college did you go to?
We went to FSU. That's where Mark and I met.
Florida State.
Wow.
But, I'm not going to type
well,
my college.
This was my apartment complex.
Okay. Okay.
A lot of them threw it in to sweeten the deal with your, it was part of the cable was typically included in the rent, and they would always have HBO because, you know, gotta be competitive. So V for Vendetta was one of those movies that would come on, I don't know, midnight, 1 a.m., and then you just couldn't stop watching it. And then all of a sudden, because of commercial breaks, you're up till 4 a.m.
What, finishing the movie?
Good memories.
Gotta finish it.
Your fourth pick,
so,
Adam.
I'm just going to say, the Bible college that I went to, when I stayed on campus, they had a no TVs in dorm rule.
Ooh.
Oofta.
So I smuggled in a Commodore 64 monitor and put a DVD player into it. And so they couldn't, like, I got them on a technicality.
I got you.
That's a real OG. Which was,
that's exactly what I am. I'm going to go Miami Vice.
Oh, that's an underrated action film.
It's, everybody hates it. And you watch it, I'm like, I kind of dig this movie.
Should we talk about it sometime on the pod?
Yeah, I also have another proposal that we'll get into in a little bit.
I like it. All right, Meg, your last pick.
Okay, last. I feel like there's a movie I should pick, but I'm just going to pick War Horse instead because I love War Horse.
He's in so many good movies. All right, final pick.
It's tough to have a bad horse movie.
It's true. I mean, it is downright heartbreaking towards the end.
Was that your high school yearbook quote, Adam?
It's hard to, it's actually, yes. Just, there's no story, just yes. It's hard to have a bad horse movie.
I flummoxed you for
As
the first time ever.
As they say, wild hearts cannot be broken, Mark.
They can't.
So, Hidalgo. When I, horse Hidalgo, movie. Man, that movie, like, dog,
it's a
right
horse
in the field.
Movie.
Yeah, I know, it's good. Yeah, no, it's a good one.
As you know, I work with teenagers, and, oftentimes, boy teenagers will say to me, I'm inviting a girl over for like to watch a movie at my house. What should I watch? And I always lend them The Man from Snowy River.
Really?
Yeah. It's an Australian horse movie. You know what I mean? Like it's fantastic. It's good. And it's like it's a love story, but it's not super cheesy. It always works out well. But also my final pick is Tyrannosaur.
Ooh, Tyrannosaur. That's a good one.
It's a good one of those movies,
yeah,
right? Like,
it's a rough one. It's not like a pleasant watch.
No, it's a rough one.
What is Tyrannosaur?
Patty Considine directed it, and it's just a really rough English film. No, is it English film?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a gut punch.
What's it about, though?
What's it about, Adam?
I'll just read you the plot.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Megan's going to be out after the first sentence. One night, an unemployed widower drunkenly kicks his dog Bluey to death.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you're right. I'm out.
Yeah, it's gnarly. That's a gnarly picture. But well directed.
Yeah, no, it's really good, but it's rough.
Can I be that jerk that just goes, this is what I would have picked?
Well,
no.
Imagine we said no.
Yeah, well, no, we did a great job.
I just want to say that I love The New World, and that's like one of my favorite movies of recent memory. So The New World is just something I want to say. It's a Terrence Malick flick. It's beautiful.
Okay.
So I just want to plug that. Is that good? I'm not being a jerk?
No, you're not. Not any more than usual.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good point.
I would like to call out Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yeah, that's a great show.
So good.
Loved it. And, oh, all right. I was going to say another one, but we... All right, so Megan, you have Gentleman, Hobbs and Shaw, World's End, V for Vendetta, and Warhorse. And Adam has Tyrannosaur, Gangs in New York, Beowulf and Grendel, Jack the Giant Slayer, and Miami Vice.
Looking at my list again, I went with movies that people generally don't like.
Well, head to movies, films, and flicks, and let's see if that happens.
Right.
All right, so we'll see what people say.
I love your weird movie data.
Yeah.
It's one of the many things that has endeared me to you. Your post the other day about movies that have the word perfect in them and like their Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah.
Made me, I was dying laughing. And my wife was like, what are you laughing at? And I showed her the post and she's like, yeah, okay, it's not that funny. I'm like, but it is that funny. Like, it's so funny.
I'm glad you think so.
That makes me really happy.
I came downstairs and Mark was making our protein shakes for breakfast and he just stopped laughing at something. And I'm like, what are you doing? And it was that is what he was doing.
So yeah. Movies with perfect in their title have a 45% tomato meter score, and movies with zero in their title have a 65% tomato meter score.
Right. It just tickled me. I don't know what it was about it. Maybe, but I was like, this is the internet finally being used to its fullest capacity.
See, that's why you guys get along so well, because these random non sequitur things entertain you so highly.
And you know what? I made sure to add before it random and useless data, just so people couldn't be like, this is stupid. But I feel like with you, I wouldn't need that. And you would just embrace it.
My rule of thumb, because I'm often in front of rooms full of people, is you never apologize before you start.
Yeah.
If you get in front of a room full of people and you're like, hey, sorry, this isn't going to be a great message. This isn't going to be – the band didn't practice. Like, never – if you apologize, people are out already.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm like, Mark, just own it, man. Like, don't – you don't need to preface it that it's silly movie data. We know who you are. Just be you, man. Just go full.
Yeah, you know, Megan's been telling me that for years because I've just learned – because I've had some big hits. I had one about Marvel data recently where I figured out the alone time, and it got 30,000 upvotes on Reddit. Huge post. But
right.
People don't – see, the thing is people don't read, and then they say this is stupid. I'm like, yeah, I said it was stupid four times in the thing. I'm like, I preface everything in the beginning, and they don't read. So I've just learned to be too defensive. So when people are like, this is stupid, I'm like, read the second paragraph. Or where's this? I'm like, read the fifth paragraph. Like, I try to cover every complaint that people have with my data. And maybe that's too defensive, but I also like combating trolls. But I'm like, I wrote that. You didn't read it. It's on you, turd.
I think that the sentence, I like combating trolls, could mean so many things, depending on which movie you're in.
Troll Hunter,
is
Willow.
Troll Hunter your favorite movie?
Ernest Scared Stupid. I love movies with trolls. Fellowship of the Ring, Lord of the Rings,
Troll Hunter
Hobbit,
is fantastic.
Harry Potter.
What do you think is the lamest and the best cinematic troll?
Okay.
Ooh.
Trantor the Troll from Ernest Scared Stupid.
Is the what?
The greatest ever.
Without even hesitation.
Oh my gosh.
I do
want to
say the final troll at the end of Troll Hunter is a beautiful scene. Whenever I watch it, I kind of tear up because it's just a beautiful troll that's sick. It's not evil. It doesn't wish people well. It's just gone crazy because of rabies and it has to get put down. So that breaks my heart. And I like the little squishy trolls that poop on the ground and get turned into muck and Willow.
What about Trolls the movie?
Troll 2 and Troll?
No, Trolls, like the dolls.
Oh, no. They're not trolls.
Hard no.
I know. That on purpose.
What about you?
Okay, well, I just want to touch on Megan's Troll the Dolls for a moment. We're all of essentially the same age demographic.
Yeah.
And so when we were children and Trolls kind of came out with their first wave of popularity, we would be grade 6 or 7. They tried to market a bunch of trolls to boys. So Mattel like put out like battle trolls, and like one was a cyborg and one was a commando.
I had those.
Right. And so they reused a lot of accessories from other toy lines.
Oh.
And I had a Swamp Thing action figure, but I had lost his like capture net thing. Mm-hmm. But then this battle troll had the same accessory, and I was like, oh, if I buy this battle troll, I can get Swamp Thing his thing back. And I had to explain to my dad in the store that I wanted this troll, and he's like, son, like, what? What? What do you want? Get something cool. I'm like, ah, this is cool, Dad. And he's like, no, it's not. And I had like a real like conversation about why I wanted a troll doll.
Oh, man.
I mean, if you've read Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, the main central character, his desk is covered in trolls.
Hey, what's your favorite cinematic troll, Meg?
Probably Troll Hunter trolls. I don't remember one specifically. It's been so long.
It's a classic.
Or the trolls from the Hobbit movies.
Yeah. Oh, the troll play.
Yeah,
oh,
that
big
guy.
Yeah.
So you guys.
I like the cave troll with a battering ram head, Adam, and the cave troll with a catapult on its back.
Of course. So love a trebuchet.
I gotta say, mine's David Bowie.
Oh, from Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's a good one. The Troll King.
He's the most beautiful
king
of all trolls.
Wait, he's the Goblin King.
Isn't he? Is he a goblin or is he the Goblin King or the Troll King?
He's the Goblin King.
Well, I apologize. I take that back. I thought I was gonna have like a big reveal, and it turns out I'm just an idiot.
You might have people trolling you now.
Oh,
imagine that.
I would love
trolling
it.
Trolling of the trolls.
Adam, get on there. Lighthouse Raspberry Square, get on there.
Is that like the tolling of the bells?
The trolling of the Hodges. Now,
so
I have a data fact that's going to blow your mind. Can I tell you something real quick? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, hit
you
with it.
But before I forget, so in this film, Hobbs and Shaw.
I was just going to say, which film?
when Dwayne Johnson in War Horse. Now, so in this movie, when the first fight between Hobbs and Shaw and Brixton, Hobbs goes to punch Brixton, and Brixton anticipates that Hobbs's punch will have a force of like 1,235 pounds. That's the force that is set on the screen. I did some homework.
What? And
Drago from Rocky IV, his PSI is 2,150, which comes out to 8,600 pounds. So by numbers, by numbers that we're talking about, Dolph Lundgren hits like six times harder than Hobbs.
Well, I mean, he's Dolph Lundgren. He's basically a superhero.
Yeah.
Genetically engineered by Russian's best scientist.
Yeah, right? He's a Universal Soldier. Is this even a conversation?
You're right. Who wins? Dolph from Universal Soldier, Megan? Or Brixton?
Which Universal Soldier?
Oh, goodness. You pick. From Universal Soldier Regeneration.
I was just going to say that.
All right, Regeneration versus Brixton. Who wins? What do you got? Who's going to win this?
I mean...
This is Meg's over here thinking. Meg's really.
That's a tough one.
Meg's flop sletting over here. She's not like this.
This is tough because I know how much you love Lundgren. And I know how much we mutually love Idris. That's hard.
Yeah. Ty.
They go get
some Swedish meatballs and lager together.
Out here to Ty.
Do you think they would just walk into a room, see each other, nod, and then walk out? Like they wouldn't talk. They would just like understand each other's power.
Yeah, like it's kind of, yeah, they get it. They're like, this would hurt both of us, and we both don't want to get hurt, and there's no reason for it, so let's not do it.
Right.
So, just responsible. I
just wanted to drop that data on you. So Hobbs and Shaw, this came out last year in 2019, and you said, Adam, that this was your favorite, like, did you say it was the best film or your favorite film of 2019?
It was my favorite film of 2019. Now, I do have I've been called out on it that I'm too sentimental, but when I get to experience a movie through my kids' eyes, like I bring them into the theater, it amplifies that like 1,000% for me. So when I saw Wonder Woman and my daughter was standing in her chair cheering in the theater, like there's not a better moment than that, right?
No.
And so my son was home with me alone because my wife and daughter were up at summer camp and we were doing junior high camp here. And so we went out to the movies with a couple friends, and this was his first forte into the Fast and the Furious world. And he was like blown away by the movie he was watching. And again, like screaming and cheering. And I was like, it was just like a moment in time that you can't get that back. So it was my favorite movie experience of 2019.
I mean, I wish I would have watched Wonder Woman with Megan. So I was in San Francisco and I was exhausted. And
I made you go watch it.
Yeah, and I was just so burnt out from work. I was like on my fourth work trip of like the month and I was exhausted. And I went to this theater in San Francisco. They had a balcony and a bottom floor. Everything was sold out. And I would say never before in a comic book movie, this is rare, it was probably like 70% women in the theater.
Right.
And everybody, dude, in the theater was cheering and clapping. I had never seen that. Normally with like Star Wars, it's the fanboys cheering or this, that, Batman, stuff like that. I had never heard cheering like that before by like a non-comic book audience. This was just an audience who loved the movie. And that's why I love Wonder Woman, because of the theatrical experience I had. Yeah, well, I didn't have Meg there, but it was so cool.
I know, I was nodding at you like I knew, but then I'm realizing I wasn't there, so.
Yeah.
In like 2006, I went to a big like conference at a huge church in Chicago, Willow Creek it's called. And there's like 30,000 people there. It's a mega church. But Ralph Winter goes there.
Oh.
So he's like the producer of like X-Men and and so he's buddies with Bryan Singer. So he arranged 2 weeks early for us to see a screening of Superman Returns.
Oh, nice.
So they said we have like 200 tickets, and it was like, you know, 10,000 people at this thing. The first 200 people after the session to go to and get the tickets can go see it. So I just ran out during the session.
Trucking people.
Just like, and the lady on stage was like, not yet. And I was like, no. And I just ran. and got tickets for me and my buddies. And we went. And like in hindsight, that movie's okay at best. But we were so jazzed to see it. like 2 weeks early.
Yeah.
And everybody else, we were like, as soon as the credits happened and there were those Richard Donner credits, I was like, this is amazing. And I came back like, you, and so all my buddies were like, you saw it. I'm like, I saw it and it's spectacular. And then it came out and they're like, no, it's not. Like, it's not spectacular.
I'm going to say this right now. Nothing with Parker Posey is all bad.
So I was going to suggest that we do Blade Trinity, because I just heard your Blade Final Fight.
Yeah.
Final Fight episode. And Blade Trinity is my favorite Blade movie just because of Parker Posey.
All right, let's do it.
I love Blade Trinity.
Oh, I mean, I'm in. Let's add it to our list here.
It's Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's do it. All right. So I guess we should get into Hobbs and Shaw here before we go on break.
This reminds me of when I go to the movies and I'm so excited about all the trailers and we get to the end of the trailers and I look at Mark and I go, what movie are we here for again?
Yeah, Rise of Skywalker.
And he gets annoyed at me because it's some big movie, but still.
I don't get annoyed. I'm a very understanding husband. So this is a tale.
That almost got out of hand real quick. I was like, I'll get annoyed with you. Like,
lovingly.
This is a tale of Lucas, Rebecca Hobbs, and Deckard Shaw. All right, I just got to tell a quick story. Another one. Adam and I were really excited about the announcing of this movie. And he and I went and made a Hobbs and Shaw thing like Calvin and Hobbes. But we spelled Hobbs wrong, and we got the wrong Shaw brother name.
Right.
Because we acted too quick. But that's, we when this was announced, we were super excited. And I mean, this movie did not disappoint. I mean, it did $760 million worldwide, 67% to me.
I stand by our Hobbs and Shaw cartoons.
It's funny.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
Didn't they announce this, I mean, really closely after the movie, the last Fast movie came out?
Yeah, like right after Fate. You know, like, let's break off, let's do this. There, you know, I don't know the inside stories, but there's definitely some beef between all the, you know, Vin and The Rock. But they closed it down
really fast.
And
but this is The Rock's move, though. Like, this is his second time he's done a spinoff series.
Yeah, he jumps into a lot of sequels, and then so the originals he makes don't really get sequels, but the sequels he's in of get sequels, like Jumanji gets another one.
I would compare this to like the Scorpion King, where he was in The Mummy as a character, and then he got his own franchise out of it.
Yeah, great well, archer.
As he says, he's really likable.
Yeah, hey, nice babushka. So
like your babushka.
Like this movie, I mean, I think. Another thing is, we talked about this on our Fast 9 trailer talk that we did. That's actually been really popular and people love it. Go listen to it. Adam and I are on fire. We're just dropping bombs, aren't we?
Not like letting it happen.
Letting it happen. It was originally supposed to be like 15 minutes and it's an hour. So it's like this episode. So what I find most impressive is Jason Statham is a mass murderer. Shaw is a mass murderer in these movies. He murdered about 40 people in the beginning of Furious 7. But you like him and Hobbs so much together, and he becomes Uncle Statham in Fate of the Furious, they just sort of forget all of it, and you just kind of roll with him having a nice morning routine of making omelets and drinking coffee, while I'm sure the many orphaned kids of the policeman he murdered are having a hard life. But you don't really think about that because you just like the character so much. I don't know. Did you guys think about that?
Well, now I'm depressed.
No, I thought, honestly, when they do their like morning routines, I just think that Statham and Dwayne Johnson's morning routines. Like, I don't think they're acting. I think they're just waking up.
They put GoPros in the house, and then they just had them go around.
Right? Because that's how The Rock works out, and that's like
– I have a note here that's just them. It's about how many pillows are on The Rock's bed. That's a lot of pillows.
It's a lot of pillows. But when
you're a single man.
When you're The Rock, though, you need a lot of cushioning. That guy is massive.
He smushes
pillows. A regular mattress can't sustain his – just density.
Did we pay attention to if that mattress actually can fit his height?
Does his daughter live with him?
I think so. I think when he calls her from the field, there's a nanny or someone in the background.
Okay. And then, Adam, we noticed something. Megan noticed something. During the family tree scene, I did the math. The Rock eats 9,000 calories for breakfast. I did all the math on everything.
Of course
he
did.
But that was a cheat day.
Yeah. I mean, his other real-life cheat days have been up to 7,000, so it's not that unbelievable. But when she's making the family tree, the mom is completely left out.
Right.
That's mysterious, right?
I mean,
go ahead, Megan. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I think the girl is probably just being a brat to prove a point and get something she wants.
Do you think
that the daughter in a perfect world will get her own spin-off series where she's looking for her mom?
Oh. And it was a different daughter between Fate and this one, so they'll just make her 5 years older. and the next one and have a new daughter.
Aww, right. That makes me think of Ant-Man Girl.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I have a question, Adam.
Yes.
When they fast-forwarded 5 years in Avengers Endgame and we realized, spoiler, that we're never going to get that awesome daughter back from Ant-Man in movies, were you depressed?
Yep. The fast-forward 5 years, you've heard my theory on this whole why Tony Stark is the villain of these movies.
Oh, no, we're not going down that. We're not going
we're
down
not going
there.
That road. But no, the fast-forward 5 years, understanding we never got awesome daughter back, like there's going to be no more drive-ins at a laptop.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cute.
That's my favorite moment in Marvel movies is the drive-in at the laptop.
I feel like our feud has gotten too strong, our Captain America Tony. When I ask you a question about Ant-Man's daughter and Tony Stark comes up, I feel like me, we're getting there. We're getting to that point where, you know, when people kind of slug arms and it gets harder and harder and then it finally gets too far.
It's not that. It's because you mentioned the 5-year snap and I'm just like, oh, that's like the crux of why Tony wasn't. The hero is the thing. So I just need to digest. I'll get over.
But this, all right. Why do you love this movie so much? Aside from, you know, you went and saw it with your son, which is an amazing experience. What did you want out of this movie? I'll ask you, Adam, and then you, Megan. What did you guys want out of this movie, and why did it deliver?
Okay, so lots of things are tied to, like, you know, your experiences and whatnot. But when I was a kid, I remember my dad coming home from the theater, like he'd take my mom out like once every couple of weeks for a date, and he'd come back and then ask him how the movie was, and he'd be like, "Ah, it's good." Like he never got super excited about a movie. But one day he came home and he was like jazzed.
But what's the year?
It would have been, hold on, I'll tell you right now what year it is, because it would have been 1990.
Okay, so 1990, Total Recall.
No.
Okay.
He's not a sci-fi guy.
Okay, he's not a sci-fi guy. 1990, Tremors.
No, I wish he was excited about Tremors.
1990, Lethal Weapon
2. He's not a sci-fi guy. No, close though.
Okay, action movie, 1990. I'm done. I got nothing. What was the movie?
Die Hard 2.
Oh, yeah, Rennie Harlan.
So he came home and he was just like, "Son, I've seen the best movie in the world." Like, and I'm like, why was it so good? And he says, from the moment it started, it was action, action, go, 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 action. Like, he said, it never stopped for breath. It was nonstop. And so from whenever I see a movie that's like that, I'm like, oh, my dad would love this movie because it's nonstop action. And this movie, you started going and you just never stopped.
Yeah. I mean, Megan, you said that too. I mean, What about you? What did you want out of this movie, and then what did you get?
I think the reason I like it so much is because of it's stylish. It's got bright colors. It's very vivid. You know, there are these ridiculous vampy shots of Vanessa, Kirby, in camera with tons of makeup, looking fabulous, and I just love it. The colors pop. There's really stylish music in this movie. It just sort of gives you a feeling that everything is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it also moves, which I love a movie that moves along, which was the Expendables movie that just sort of hops along as they collect characters.
Oh, 3?
Yes, yeah. That one. It's just a lot of fun. Movies that transport you quickly through time because you don't feel like you're sitting there spending all this time. And it's funny. No. I mean, it is just super funny.
I dig the visual palette of it. Sorry, Adam. I love the visual palette. In the beginning, it's very stylish. You have that, like, you know, kind of alt song. It's very glossy. Mm-hmm. But then it moves to the sort of, like, you have the outdoor chase scene, which, all right, so guys, watch the behind-the-scenes videos of this, because it's just the guys running on treadmills and green screens, and then, when they're running down the building, they're just on treadmills running. It's amazing looking. And then, also the commentary for this movie is really good, too. And then it goes to the very sterile lab fight. And at the end, it's Open Door Island. And I love that there's 4 very distinctive visual palettes for this movie. And I think that showcases why David Leitch is such a good director. Because each action scene is different looking. And has its own, you know, like, motorcycles. And then, you know, the beginning has, you know, the skydiving. I don't know. And then the third one is... Let's see, the third one's in the lab with the big fight scene and all, like, the chase scene in, like, Chernobyl. And then the open-air one. So I love the distinctive look of it. And the action scenes, I think, move the plot forward rather than just feel like an action scene chucked into a movie.
Yeah, we had it on tonight while we worked out and then ate dinner. And I just kept sitting there thinking, oh, yeah, then this part, I really like this. And, oh, this is coming next. And I really enjoy that part. So it was just, it's definitely a fun rewatchable movie.
Yeah.
So it's very, very rewatchable, which I love. Now, two questions for you guys. What did you think of the final fight scene, like the set and the scene they were fighting in that like crevasse with the broken helicopter?
Very seashore rocks and things.
And you know what I love about that? Yeah. That was just shot all in studio, and Dwayne Johnson, all the actors were pissed off that they had to fight in rain. So they were all complaining, but David Leitch is like, the way it looks with the slow motion and the lights and the way we can frame it, it's going to look beautiful. So the actors hated it, but the director made them do it. And I guess, listen, I think it's a really fun fight, but the weakest message for me in this film, right? And maybe we can get all three of us together to talk about the final fight for the Final Fight podcast, which you should listen to. It's rate, review, subscribe. The whole point of the fight scenes, the two of them look at each other and go, oh, hey, maybe we should like work together. And these two guys are like in their 40s, late 40s. And they finally figure out, hey, maybe if we like, you know, teamed up.
Right? I love it because it's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Maybe I'm too serious with it. But what'd you think?
Well, it reminded me of Batman v Superman, where it's like, if you guys just talk for 30 seconds.
Martha!
There will be no conflict anymore.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Like, it's come on now, boys.
Even Brixton calls them out for it when they're in the lab. He says, you can't trust people to do the right thing. The world is on the line, and you guys can't even be nice to each other.
Oh, and Adam, we figured something else, too. While Jason Statham was slamming guards' faces against the wall, do you think the armed soldiers on the other side of the door were just waiting?
Yeah, for sure.
So they're just like, this guy's an idiot, right? Like, what were they... Megan, you join us. We're henchmen.
Yes.
And we know that...
Are we on the inside or the outside?
We're Brixton's team.
We're inside the hangar.
Oh, we didn't get beat up. We're waiting with guns.
We're in, like, the hangar area.
Yeah, we're waiting with guns. And we know that they're coming through these doors and we're going to ambush them.
I think somebody probably saw it on a monitor, or maybe someone starts hearing some bangs and booms and he's like, hey, Ted, do you hear that? And then they call somebody on the walkie and they go, John, will you pull up the cameras? What's going on here? And then they start gathering their buddies and they all just start waiting.
Have you ever been in the playground when you were in school and two like idiots are having a fight? And you're like, oh, look at these guys fighting. And so everybody gathers around and like watches these two guys that nobody really cares about have this fight.
Yeah.
I feel that's what's happening. All these henchmen are like, look at these guys. Look what they're trying to do. It's kind of adorable.
Why doesn't he like, help? He's doing push-ups.
Yeah, yeah, like these guys look are not on the same hearts. Team. You have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, we're set. And then, of course, they pull the Mick Jagger and the sister, Hattie, who's the most – she's like the most put – like.
She's very competent.
She's very competent. She injects herself. She's frustrated with them. Her and Eddie Marson could have escaped from that facility, taken the thing, and they never would have gotten the virus. But instead, what, melts your insides, not your outsides?
But there's a new one.
Yeah,
she melts the outsides.
She could have been gone, and then she comes back to save these jabronis. Hey, I'm taking a Dwayne Johnson term to save it.
So the Dwayne Johnson term, that's the one thing I wanted to comment on was, and it's going to be a little sidestep into the wrestling world. For years, they've been trying to get Roman Reigns to be a lovable character, like to be liked by the fans, and the fans are having no part of it, to the point where they had The Rock come in at the Royal Rumble when Roman Reigns won to try to get him over, and the fans started booing, and The Rock looked at him in the ring like, what? They don't even like you when you're next to me? And I feel like him being in this movie was like, this will get him over. We'll get the Fast and the Furious fans to like this guy. So that was the one thing that took me out of this movie when I was like, oh, there's Roman Reigns.
I do remember that Dwayne Johnson's face when everybody was booing. Dwayne's like, this is not my brand. I do not get associated with this.
I am no longer attached to this.
Yeah, this I did not sign up for this. This is not for me. But no, I'm glad that we got to break down what the henchman thought while Jason Statham was banging people's faces against the thing there.
Right.
That made me laugh.
Yeah, it's a fun vignette. Statham, I think they accurately portray, you know, The Rock is a big guy. He goes after a big guy with a big wrench. And Statham is a legacy stuntman, really good physicality, and he beats up a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Now, do you think the big wrench was like a shot at Vin Diesel?
Oh. I mean...
Well, it is a guy under a car. He comes out.
Yeah, maybe. What do you think? Do you think the wrench is?
I mean, but this is in the Fast World, though. That would be real shots fired.
Yeah.
In my own franchise.
Right. In my own house.
Was the guy bald? I forget.
I mean, I don't think they were trying to pull Vin, because that guy had the worst tactic ever of a fighter. Dom would never do that. That guy walked up right to Dwayne Johnson's face, had his arms down, and just basically asked to get knocked out.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was a wise thing. I'm asking, do you think it was a shot?
No. I think it was just a cheeky visual gag. I don't think David Leitch, during the commentary, you know, they brought up Mr. Nobody. They brought back Queenie, Helen Mirren. I don't think he wanted to fire shots. He's like, I want to build this world back. Like, he's like, I hope they go back to this. And then he was talking about what Isa Gonzalez's character, Madame M, he's like, I want her to have a role in the Fast World because she's really cool with Vin Diesel. Like, Vin Diesel gave Isa Gonzalez the blessing to be in Hobbs and Shaw because she was worried.
Right.
So she asked him, he's like, yeah, it's fine, go do it. Like, I want you to blow up. So he was totally cool with that. And the director, Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham all said that the movie defies gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not logic. They're like, we just turned everything up. Like, you just got to be able, like, the movie so knowingly turns everything up that I guess you can't hate on it. Is that like, because it's not based in reality.
Science fiction?
Yes. Because now Brixton Lohr is a zombie, correct, Adam?
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
He dead.
Yeah, wasn't he shot in the, where did Shaw, in the head?
Yeah, he said in the brain.
Oh, yeah, well.
Is he a zombie or is he a universal soldier?
Oh, he's a unisol.
But remember in The Kingsman, he got shot in the head and they put that fancy little bubble thing over him and brought him back. So.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe this isn't the Kingsman world.
But how much would you love it, though?
Maybe Julianne Moore is the bad guy.
Ooh.
Well, but what if the voice like that, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if that's Van Damme?
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh.
And it's just the evolution of the Unisol program.
Dun, dun, dun.
And can Scott Adkins be in it in the next one?
Oh, please.
100%.
Yes.
Scotty X is our boy. I got to say, my biggest disappointment about Expendables 2, which features Statham, so this is more of a sideways conversation, the fight was not as long as it should have been. When you have Jason Statham, who there's a stunt coordinator named J.J. Perry. He did all the stunts on, like, he coordinated Haywire, he coordinated John Wick 2, major, major movies. He did second unit on Bloodshot, that's why it looks so good. He said that Jason Statham is the best actor / stuntman he's ever worked with. So you have Jason Statham and Scotty Bad Boy Atz in a fight scene, and it's 2 minutes long.
It's a travesty.
That's a 50-minute fight.
It's a crime against humanity.
That's a movie.
Yeah. Yes. That's like a Jet Li, like, if, you know, Jet Li, Jason Statham had those movies. Like, that's, oh.
No, I mean, Scott Adkins has those movies. He has lots of them.
And I watch all of them.
Yes, you do.
I got sidetracked. But listen, guys, Scotty Adkins, actor of the future. Watch him.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Because we took a sidestep, so I'm going to take.
You're going to do a little shuffle, come back?
You're going to do a little shuffle. Of the three movies, who's your favorite Expendable?
Oh,
Gunner.
Yeah, of course you love
it. No, I like Jet Li, because Jet Li's character in that movie is like, I need money. Give me more money.
I like Randy Couture, because he would beat the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, and they all admit to it.
I'm full Antonio Banderas.
Oh, he was so good in that. Him and Ronda Rousey.
Like, I'm really, really good. Yeah. Like, just give me a chance. It's so adorable.
That fight scene at the end. And Glenn Powell's
I was just going to say, I do like Glenn Powell, the rock climber.
That battle scene, watching Randy Couture and Dolph Lundgren in a tank yucking it up and blowing people up.
I mean, Randy Couture can beat them all up, and they know it.
Yeah, that's what they said, if they locked the door. And I also love... Like,
you can tell that Mark makes me watch MMA, and now I like it.
No, you went full, like Randy Couture, just, like, you got almost indignant, like, who does Stallone think he is?
Yes.
Well, Stallone said, because people were like, hey, guys, like, you guys are big and muscular, and you're all so big. And then they went, who would win if you guys, like, were locked in a door? And everyone just looked at Randy. They're like, 1 minute later, he would be sitting on all of us.
Right.
Which I love. But, I mean, dude... Like, you have Sylvester Stallone fighting a bulked up Mel Gibson in that movie who's looking like just a tank. And then you have Glenn Powell running around, Ronda Rousey and Antonio Banderas killing people.
I do like Kelsey Grammer as the collector of people. He's quite entertaining.
He tells a 10-minute story that makes no sense to the plot. All right,
I just think they're like, Kelsey, do you want to be in this movie? And he's like, if I can have an Oscar scene, like if I can have a scene where I get to really tell a story.
Mickey Rourke had one in The Expendables.
Give me a villain monologue, but make it good guy.
Yeah, a good guy villain monologue.
Right? Just exposition that's not needed. That's good.
If I had to rank them, I'd do 2 and 3 and then 1. No, 2 and 3 on the same level and then 1.
Yeah. So I think 1 tried to be, but they were still holding back a little bit because they didn't think they could really do it full force.
Yeah.
And then once they got in there, they're like, let's just go for it.
And also having Wesley Snipes.
Well, and they had that whole weird Charisma Carpenter angle that wasn't necessary.
Oh, the basketball scene?
Yeah. I don't know.
So Expendables 3 does get weird, though, when the two teams are, like, meeting each other and flexing on each other. Like, who are these young guys? Well, I'm not taking you because you're going to die. Oh, brother. All right, so back
to you.
Think,
so it's
Hobbs and Shaw. We'll get there in a second. Do you think the Van Damme knife kick is the best Van Damme kick ever?
Ever. And his words, like, I have a tattoo. Doesn't he say stuff like that? It's a big tattoo.
I don't know. We got to watch these again.
Yeah, Expendables 2 is one of my favorites.
Yeah. When he kicks that knife, I was like, I want him to win.
He kicked it out of... Yeah, that was his fight with Stallone, right? Where he just belted it out of there?
No, he kicked the knife into that guy at Thor's brother at the beginning.
Oh, I don't remember that. Did Scotty Atz throw it?
No. Van Damme threw it. Van Damme threw it and then kicked it into the guy's chest.
Oh, so he pulled a Wesley Snipes from Blade.
Yeah, but without the vampire powers.
Oh, wow. All right, we need to watch this again.
Mm-hmm. I'm for it.
I own it. I'll watch it. All right, so.
I own it. It got real braggy. Well, I happen to own this movie, so I can watch it whenever I want,
I have the
Megan.
Digital copy, so when I'm out and about,
I'll
I can just
pull
up Vudu.
On Vudu.
Yeah, exactly. I can
watch it. Have I heard that before?
Exactly. Just put it on Vudu, yeah. Vudu's great. All right, hey, how about this? Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more Hobbs and Shaw. Or try to.
We'll talk some Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I'm going to get us really focused here, guys. I am going to...
Laser focus.
Laser focus. Now,
okay, you can say it next time.
We were talking about this in the opening scene where Hattie successfully gets away from Hobbs, and then she drives away and it's Hobbs standing there with all the dead MI6 agents. His three henchmen come up, and one of his henchmen was the really tough guy that fought John Wick in the bar in First John Wick. So if you listen to the commentary, David Leitch the entire time is just like, there's a stuntman, there's a stuntman, he was in this, he was in that, he coordinated this, so this movie's loaded with them. But there's kind of a dumb question where Hobbs is standing there and his three henchmen come up, and they're like, what do you want us to do with these guys? It's kind of like, well, I think you kind of know what you should do with these guys. Now, you're an evil overlord.
Throw them in the river.
If anyone's an evil overlord, I guess it would be Megan here. So we're henchmen.
That's fair.
Adam. Yeah. And Megan has killed an entire MI6 thing. You and I come up, and there's tons of dead bodies. We know we can't leave them there, right? We just can't leave them there. We got to take off traces and stuff. You and I don't look at Megan and go, hey, boss, what do you want us to do?
No, my henchmen have to be doers. I don't have time for that.
Yeah, we need to be, like, proactive.
I need people who are going to figure things out on the fly.
So, and I liked Idris's reaction to it. He's like, what? I don't have time for this. Like, I'm Idris.
Actually, I think our reaction, if we walked into that, would be like, Megan, sorry we haven't got here sooner.
Yeah.
Like, sorry that there's a mess here for you to see.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Thank you, Adam.
Oh.
I appreciate that.
No, like, we should have
punished, but I appreciate that you identified that.
Wait, I took it as Hobbs went in by himself because he knew he was bad enough. So we knew that Megan was in. She told us, hold back. And we're like, okay. Right. Like, we don't argue with Megan when she goes into berserker mode.
No.
So she puts on her war helmet and her axes, and she goes in and kills people. We wait.
Just a Friday night.
And then we could go in and clean up, right? But we don't ask questions. We don't go... Like, listen, when there's big tactical missions, we're on the side of the buildings with them. We run down a building, and we get magnets shot onto our backs, which is going to come into play in Fast 9, by the way, with the magnet car.
Oh.
Like, we're running on the side of the building with Brixton. But we also know, with Megan, I mean, we also know enough to, like, not ask stupid questions.
Right. And I think when we first started, like, with our rookie year working for Megan, we did...
I need you to be able to ask me questions if you fully don't understand, because we all need to be on the same page. So I need you to be able to come to me if you really do need my help.
Right. But I think too, like in our rookie year when Megan would be like, I got this, you hold back. We probably took Perch and like, just in case it was a Man Who Shot Liberty Valance situation.
Yeah.
Was going to, but after working for her for a year, year and a half, like, you know, when she says hold back, like she's got this. Let's just go get the body bags ready. Let's just get the cleanup stuff. Let's go get our Lysol wipes.
You got the bleach.
We're going to wipe this place down in like 3 to 4 minutes.
You know what? I can put a brick through a chest.
Oh, yeah. How do you do that? The sharp end. So we're like the NASCAR Trade pit secret. Crew of cleanup.
That's exactly what we are.
Do you think that Brixton times their cleanup, or do you think he just doesn't care?
I think he times it with a stolen Italian watch from a Ferrari guy.
Oh, good. That is one of my favorite moments.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's crazy. Right?
Adam understands me on a deep level.
So that's one of your favorite moments.
He's my head henchman now.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite moment of cinema this year so far.
Wait, so does that mean...
the watch deal.
You want to watch? They're Italian.
Does that mean that you are Jericho and I'm Hank from my trailers, from Dirty Hoff trailers?
100%.
All right, that's fair. I'm a glue-huffing, semi-conscious henchman. And you just got to carry me around.
No. I only employ... clean henchman.
Glue doesn't
but
show
do you
up.
Think, do you think that in a movie called Hench we're going to make?
Yeah.
I like it.
So Megan, who is your wife, hires you as a henchman.
That's trust.
Yeah.
But at home at night, I go to my apartment and you guys go home together. She says, like, isn't Adam doing a great job? Like, it's a lot of like, you know, Mark, like, yeah, you were fine, but, like, Adam really pulled up the A game today. He just gets me. Yeah. And it just said, like, a grateful boss, good employee relationship, that's all. But you can't handle that. And that's when you turn into, you know, Hank.
Oh, I become the stereotypical guy that gets, like, real, like, cavalier.
You can't. Right. Yeah.
You just gotta...
I'm sorry.
And then the sequel will be called Hench, semicolon, It's Just Business.
Swim with the Fishes. All right, so I guess this first scene happens. She injects herself with a parasite, or no, virus. Mm-hmm. And then they bring in
world-ending melting insides virus.
They bring in Hobbs and Shaw into California, or to England, and they don't want to work together.
Mm-hmm.
But together... Right.
They make that very clear.
Yeah, they have to go... Okay, another thing. While Jason Statham is looking for his sister, while Shaw is looking for his sister, he has a fight in his sister's apartment. A grenade.
Oh, it's so stylish, too.
A grenade is thrown.
And it says bang.
And I counted the seconds on the grenade that the henchman threw.
Right.
And that's like a 30-second grenade. I'm not like a grenade expert.
But what about that collection in the closet?
I'm not technically a grenade expert.
Yeah.
But I do know a thing or two about grenades.
This grenade is there for 30 seconds. That's not right.
No.
Okay, cool. I'm just glad we're on the same page. But that's a really fun fight scene. And then I do love the fight scene between Hobbs and Hattie. I like that she kind of, like, she uses any weapon imaginable. The helmet, ooh. She kicks the nuts. She
goes for the car battery, and he looks at her and says, no.
Even in their first fight, they're flirting.
Yeah, pretty much. She's like, are you good or bad?
Yeah, it's like, and it reminded me of, like, as a child, if like when you see a child, like, having a temper tantrum and, like, fighting with their dad, and, like, the kid's going all for it, but the dad's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now we'll end it. And that's kind of what was happening with The Rock. He was like, let's just let her play a little bit. Okay, we're done now.
I like, though, that when, because it's pretty interesting, the first fights that he got into, the people were pretty afraid of him. She went on the offensive against him. So I think he kind of liked that. But I like at the end when he picked her up in the air and she gives him a lip snarl.
Yeah.
She is not happy about it.
No, like now, Mark, I have a movie data question for you.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's a two-parter.
Uh-oh.
When one is retrofitting their apartment with equipment and guns everywhere, hidden in the appliances and the walls and whatever, and you're not, like, she doesn't work for the government. She seems to be some kind of just freelance, espionage lady.
Yeah.
Is that a general contractor that does that work? What is the, parent or like the client employee confidentiality? Like, what's the rules there?
Well,
and what's that cost?
Okay, so I think since she knows that her mom, Queenie, she hasn't talked to her brother in a while because he murdered 40 people, police right. officers, and her other brother is...
Allegedly.
What? her other brother, I don't know, really know what he's going on to, but she knows people in the underground. She knows criminals. So I think she's very honorable, but she knows she has to go to outward places to get this built in her home.
Right.
You don't think she built it herself?
No. Like, wow. You have to have like 2-3 people, right? You need help to install all that.
Yeah. You can't pick that concept of an idea.
She could have been one of 3 people who knew the most, but she needed some help. Mm-hmm. So she could have written it, blueprinted it, bought all the gear. But you need people in there helping.
So did she do this like H.H. Holmes? She had random people. So you come, oh yeah, I'm building a storage thing behind my wall. It's for jewelry.
And they
build different parts individually, and none of them knows the full story.
Or she could have just lied to some dudes, right?
Of her murder flat.
Oh, murder flat.
Murder flat.
H.H. Holmes was a horrible human being. But yeah.
I just want to see the movie called Murder Flat.
Murder Flat. This summer, one flat, one room.
I think there's money in a, like...
The banana stand?
Yeah. Well, there's always money in the banana stand. But, like, you know the home and garden, like, you know, property virgins and, like, you know, sell it or love it or love it or leave it.
Yeah.
But if it was just, like, a henchman show about retrofitting your house with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Or where to hide them.
Well, that's a whole, like,
Punisher
thing on Pinterest. That is huge. There is all these... You know, inventive ways to
there are clocks you
store
put your
things.
But
in
I'm
your house.
Talking about a comedy show where, like, husbands and wives should be like, you don't put the rifles there. And, like, there's all the drama of the Home and Garden television channel, but as henchmen.
They should do it.
I think that would be fun. I think there would be a disturbing appetite for that show, which is probably why it won't happen.
I'm not going to lie. I'm feeling pretty self-conscious about my overzealous reaction to her not being able to build it by herself. Because I've said no very loudly. However.
So I ducked out of that conversation because Megan was like, you don't think she built it? And you were like, no. Like, you were so upset.
Yeah,
that
he was trying to convince me.
Well, I guess for me, I'm just thinking by themselves. Because I've, you know, I put together a bookshelf in my house. And I did most of it by myself. But my neighbor came over and helped me put the finishing touches on it. Like, there's just, oh, it looks beautiful. I'll share a photo of it. It looks amazing. Megan's coworkers saw it and they're like, oh, that thing looks like it costs thousands. And Megan's like, nope.
Yeah, IKEA. They thought it was a built-in. It's definitely from IKEA.
So, humble brag.
Nice.
But, yeah, I had him come over and put the finishing touches. So I just see it more as a collaborative process, not a bunch of people coming in going, yeah, lady, this is going to cost $7,000 here. I'll come in next week. Wait, why does he have a southern accent in England? I'm all over the place.
You know, there's a north everywhere, there must be a south.
There's a north everywhere?
It's from Doctor Who.
I'm with you.
All right, so there's nothing. So they get together, Hobbs and Shaw. There's nothing subtle about Hobbs, and there's very much stuff that's subtle about Statham because he drives a Ferrari around and is immaculately tailored.
It was a McLaren.
Cool.
Yeah, McLaren. He just looks amazing.
Well,
so,
and that was the car from the Italian Job.
In his house. He did a thing in Italy.
No, but like the McLaren he got was the car that he wanted to get in the Italian Job.
I did not know that. I just remembered the car from the Italian car from a job in Italy.
Yeah, that's the Austin Mini, right?
Yeah,
the Cooper.
The Mini Cooper.
But remember he's like, what would you spend your money on? And he's like, oh, I buy this McLaren. And what's his name? Buys it first.
Oh, I can't believe I didn't pick up on that.
That's cool.
And they shot in McLaren in this movie.
I was
going to
say that. Yeah, they shot at their offices.
Yep, they shot in McLaren. Yeah. And now, I got to say, this features one of my favorite moments. And Megan, this is on our random awards, which I heard the other day is very popular amongst people.
Awesome. We should do more.
We did the best whiskey pour. And in this movie, The Rock asked The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, Hobbs, if he wants a drink. And he goes, yeah, just a little bit. And Hattie perfectly pours him an entire rocks glass full of whiskey, like to the brim, and doesn't spill it.
Yeah, the most impressive thing about that is how she gets all the way to the top and doesn't spill anything. I have trouble pouring water into the tank of the coffee maker without spilling it out the side because the coffee pot is so clumsy.
Yeah.
So, Impressive.
Yeah.
For any type of liquid, much less whiskey.
He's not drink. The Rock doesn't drink all that.
No.
No. I think Statham swigs it and finishes it.
Yeah.
And I'm also kind of worried. This is kind of gross, guys, but when The Rock eats his 9,000 calorie breakfast, that's in the morning. Then he immediately gets on a plane. Like, he's going to be very uncomfortable for his journey over to England.
Only you would think of this.
All right.
Now, here's a question for you.
Thank you.
How old do you think Hobbs' daughter is in this movie?
12? 10?
Yeah, I'd say 10.
Yeah.
I think it's very
9
concerning
to 11?
Yeah.
I think it's very concerning that she's watching Game of Thrones.
Oh, I heard that line just when we were watching it earlier, and I thought the same thing she said, I've seen worse. There's so much worse in that show.
Yeah, Game of Thrones. You'll learn everything in that show.
Yeah, no, it's I just thought that was like a questionable parenting move.
Yeah, The Rock didn't know, but The Rock's never around. He's always around the world.
Yeah, he's hanging out with the fast
crew. He can't be mad at her
he tells her like a Game of Thrones reference at some point, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, he's like Jon Snow.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he tries to be the cool dad. Yeah. All right, so.
Have you seen The Rock on Instagram lately?
No, what's he doing?
So he has this little daughter now, and her favorite movie is Moana.
Hey.
And so he'll sing her like the Maui parts.
Aww.
And she's like, Dad, you almost do it as good as Maui. She has no idea that he's Maui. And so he's like, my daughter's biggest hero right now is Maui, but I can't tell her it's me because it'll like shatter her childhood. So he's like, aww, this dilemma online about like, can he tell his daughter who he is?
Wow. I mean, wow. I guess it's a good problem to have.
That's cute.
I wouldn't mind having that problem.
I wish she didn't say Maui, no Maui, Wowie, no Wowie. Wait, never mind.
It's all good.
I tried.
There was a joke there, you just didn't land on it, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I triple lindied, but I only single lindied, and I broke my leg.
Oh.
Yeah, and I fell, like, I missed the board completely, the second board.
And you ruined your figure skating career.
Yeah, that's
really
right.
Sad. That's it. It's tragic.
Do you think Ryan Reynolds wakes up in the morning and his wife says to him, what are you doing today? And he says, oh, I'm just going to go and steal the show. And then he goes to wherever he's going, steals the show, and goes home.
I think he 100% does that.
Because he steals the show on this one.
If you follow Blake Lively's Instagram account, they are both about stealing the show all day long.
Yeah, they got good riff.
Yeah.
He's funny. Yeah. They sent him the script, and then he got with his script writers, and they rewrote the script for the scene.
How can I one-up yesterday?
Yeah, exactly. So he was only there one day. So he did all that diner scene by himself and then the scene with the terrorists in one day. So
I can see it. It's not really that much footage.
Well, I guess the shot they just did a single on him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just him saying stupid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I guess it's not much. And Ryan Reynolds is a pro. And you don't really tell Ryan Reynolds what to do. And Leech had worked with him before.
I'm almost convinced that the Rock tattoo he was wearing was just him in the morning doing it with a Sharpie and showed up like that.
Yeah, because that wasn't in the script. You know that was all Reynolds.
It couldn't have been in the script.
I love that scene. Oh my gosh. That's a lot of work to look just like The Rock. That tattoo.
It is.
I think it's very disturbing because it feels back to the single white male comment. Like he's been just stalking him for ages. You know, scrolling through maybe Hobbs' Instagram account, sees the shirtless picture at the beach.
He's liking it. He likes
takes
everything.
Takes it to the tattoo artist or takes it upon himself.
He leaves a comment on every single social media post that Hobbs has.
Oh, for sure.
So I go to a summer camp up north every summer and I like speak for a week and do the music and whatnot. And so one of the staff there, he's this guy named Schmidt. That's like what we call him. His real name is John Anderson. But we play a game called Bucket Ball, which is essentially basketball in the lake. So you go to the lake, it's basketball, there's two baskets on the dock. And it's full tackle.
shallow lake? Or are you wading?
Yeah, it's like up to your knees. You kind of run around in the shallow end of the lake, and it's like a sandy bottom, so it's safe. But it's full tackle. It's nuts. It's the best game in the world. Mark, you would love it. And so the LITs one year, who are the leaders in training, they play against the staff. And so one of them was like, hey. Because I was drawing, like, as I would speak, I'd draw pictures and do poster art and stuff. They were like, can you paint us war paint for our bucketball game? And I was like, yeah. So I just started painting these dudes up. And then John Anderson, Schmidt, came to me and he was like, I need to look very intimidating for the bucketball game later today. So I took a Sharpie and I gave him the Rock's tattoo, a la Ryan Reynolds with a Sharpie. And he loved it until he woke up the next day and all of his sheets were black because he didn't shower before he went to bed. He was just sweaty and covered in Sharpie, and it just made everything black.
Oh, no.
So his whole summer was all Sharpied up.
I have a question. Who wins, right? Who wins? Yeah. Your group of Bucketballers or Hobbs' family at the end? They're all ready to battle. So you guys square off. Who wins?
I think the Bucketballers, because they're battling against water. That's tough.
Yeah.
I played water polo, and those guys must be tough.
Yeah. Would you guys outlast Hobbs and his family?
I think the Bucketballers would come out strong.
Yeah. Fade quick.
They would not. They don't have the endurance of the Samoas.
Yeah. Yeah. So it would be, they'd have a really good 6 seconds, and then it would just all go downhill from there.
Yeah, literally down the hill, on a chain, on a helicopter.
Like, off a cliff.
No, off a cliff.
I gotta say, in this movie, they had Hobbs recreating what Captain America does. But
here
worse.
We go. Here Wait. We go.
Now.
What?
So, all right, remember in Captain America Civil War?
Did you say but worse?
Yeah, so Captain America is holding on to a stationary pole in Captain America, and he's grabbing a helicopter, and he's like, "Aah!" In this one, Dwayne Johnson is holding on to a vehicle and a rope or like a chain
attached to a helicopter,
and he's holding an Apache helicopter a legit helicopter.
That's why it's science fiction.
He's in a movie. So Captain America was stationary, and it takes an immense feat of strength by a super soldier. Hobbs is a dude in a moving vehicle grabbing to a chain and another thing. If this was like, okay, this obviously isn't real life, but he would look like the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. His arms would be gone. They would be no more. So is he... how strong is Hobbs? Is Hobbs human?
Well, see, a little-known fact, Mark, is that people on the island of Samoa spend their formative years training by throwing chains from one car to another car.
Because they were very good at it.
So they link up. And that motion of throwing chains builds an incredible amount of strength that helps you hold onto helicopters. So the logic is there.
So what you don't know about Captain America is that the serum they used on him was actually distilled from the blood of Samoans.
Yeah. 100%.
Done. Explained.
So he's... Yeah. I mean, but you know what, though? You watch that scene and you just kind of love it. I don't know. You just... When I watched Hobbs and Shaw for the first time, that's not the thought that crossed my mind. It was probably like the fourth time I watched it.
I think I was cheering the whole movie.
Yeah, because look what he's... like. I don't know. I dig it. I like the EMP plan. I like that everything was they had the technology. The Samoans were very analog. I dug that final fight scene. I mean, Cliff Curtis has never been bad at anything.
No. So do you think that in the next movie, Vin Diesel and the boys are going to end up at the Hobbs custom shop?
Oh, for sure. Because they made nice.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Because
I think that's a waste if they don't.
I mean,
I agree.
Now that Vin and The Rock kind of crushed it, listen, here's the thing. I will go watch any Fast and the Furious movie ever made with whatever characters. Mm-hmm. It has to be one character from the franchise. If it's Ludacris' character and that's it, I'm watching it 3 times in the theater.
Have you watched the animated series yet?
No. Okay. You just blew up my point. I'm making a point. you just blew it up like those things in this movie. I mean, I am... You just shut me down like
those oil barrels that they buried under the Samoan sands.
You just shut me down like Brixton was shut down. But if you know that The Rock is going to be in a Fast movie, that's going to make you an additional 100 mil. Probably. Or 50 mil, we'll say. So you gotta, like, even if you're pissed off at Dwayne Johnson, it's like, come on, man. Like, come make an appearance. Like, make an appearance in our movie. And financially speaking, we just want... because. If you're Vin Diesel, you get points from this movie. Like, you get a big... You get box office if you're Vin Diesel right now. Mm-hmm. So, it behooves you to add Dwayne Johnson. Because that makes you more money.
Right.
And then you can make Last Witch Hunter, too.
Ooh, yeah. I'm into that.
And Bloodshot, too.
Oh, Bloodshot. The flower fight is so fun.
Have you seen Bloodshot yet, Adam?
I haven't. So, it was on my list of things to do, but then the world stopped.
Yeah. It is... We love that movie. I am a big Bloodshotter. But no, I mean, I don't know. Bring him in, but I don't know.
Our last movie before everything went kaput, where I was like, oh, I could go see Bloodshot today. But I instead took my kids to go see My Spy.
Oh, how was that?
It's adorable.
Is that the Will Smith one?
No, that's the Batista one.
Oh, Batista. What's the firefighter one? Oh, that's John Cena.
Yeah. So okay. It's Batista, and then, like, he's a CIA agent, and then he's there's a girl in it, and she's kind of like Cop and a Half, but with CIA and Batista. It's pretty fantastic.
We should do one that ranks the kids with that action stars, so or dogs. So you have Chuck Norris inside or Top Dog. Mm-hmm. You have
Top Dog.
Two and a half cops, Turner and Hooch. You have
Canine.
Kindergarten Cop, and then you have Dolph Lundgren's in Kindergarten Cop 2.
My kids watched Kindergarten Cop for the first time last week.
The Pacifier. How'd they like it?
They watched it again the next day.
Nice.
Loved it.
It's like you have to survive that if you're an action star for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
All right, so what else? We have not talked about a lot in this movie, but okay.
We haven't talked about the airplane ride and the special guest appearance.
What about Franz Gruber?
Oh, okay, so all the airports things.
Okay.
So the secret identities.
Yeah, so Cock Small and Franz Gruber. My Ox Small, you are under arrest.
I go by Michael.
Yeah.
How'd you get out of that? I'm very likable.
Yeah, nice babushka. But Franz Gruber makes me so happy. It's just straight up a Hans Gruber thing, but just seeing Jason Statham with a ski cap puts joy in my heart.
But how is that a disguise?
It's a ski cap.
Because now he has something on his head, whereas before he was bald.
So in the movie Bottle Rocket, they put little pieces of tape on their noses.
Right.
And then when they were robbing a place, the people just went, why do you have tape? Like, why is that tape there? And then when they were asked what the people looked like, they just thought about the tape on the people's nose. So with Franz Gruber, you're like, have you seen this man? No, I haven't. I haven't seen anybody like that. I mean, no. There might have been a guy with a little ski cap, but I don't think that was him. You know, like, I think it's a sight gag, right?
Yeah.
I think seeing The Rock in a tight shirt is more conspicuous.
But see, The Rock can't hide anywhere.
No.
He can't.
Nothing is subtle with this man.
No. And it's amazing to me that the man made a living as a professional wrestler, and now he's so much bigger when he's not wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, he's huge. I mean, he's a brand. He gets San Andreas makes money. Rampage makes money.
San Andreas was very fun.
Yeah, it's a cheeky movie.
I like me some Rampage.
Ian Grufford.
Oh yeah, Rampage. Yep.
So they get on the plane, and I love Dinkley. And the one thing I like about Dinkley with Kevin Hart is that he's an actual. What I like about him is he pegs the both of them. He knows they're up to something. Then they peg him. But he's like special forces. And then when they need an airplane, he gets them an airplane.
From a bathroom.
Yeah, from a bathroom. Like he...
Like, that's not weird enough. I like that there's just such weird moments in this movie.
And he's such a weird guy, but he's also a complete, legit warrior who can get you airplanes.
There's a lot of very competent people, yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and Locke is very confident. Loeb is confident. Like, he's confident. Dinkley. That's such a bad name. They call him
but
Dinkley.
But here's what Kevin Marshall Hart did for me. First, there was the Ryan Reynolds surprise cameo. Didn't see it coming. And then, boom, there was the Kevin Hart surprise cameo. And then I was just waiting for another cameo for the rest of the movie.
Oh, and what about, was Cliff Curtis a cameo? No, Cliff Curtis. I guess
not at that level, right? Yeah. Like, I was waiting for somebody else to show up.
Well, we get a little bit more of Helen Mirren in the stinger.
Queenie.
Yeah, but like an unknown character just to pop. Like, I was like, what are they going to do? Because there was no rules in this movie.
I got it.
Right? And I was like, the motorbike is a transformer and we're just not even talking about it. Like, it blows up and we never discuss that motorbike was a transformer ever again.
I got it. I have a perfect cameo.
Talk to me.
So here it goes. So at the very end, right? They're in a lot of trouble. Everything's going down. The Samoans are kind of turning the tide.
Right.
Out of nowhere, Mr. Yep. Shimmy comes with a couple people. And it's Bruce Campbell, who's an associate of Mr. Nobody, Kurt Russell. And Bruce Campbell comes out with a rocket launcher and helps Hobbs and Shaw. And he's called Mr. Shimmy.
Okay. So, Megan.
Yes.
You be the judge of this. So you're the studio exec. And there's two guys bringing you ideas here.
Okay, all right.
And one is the Bruce Campbell idea.
Pitch me.
No, it's the Mr. Shimmy. You got to sell Mr. it, man. You're underselling my idea, man. I'm getting passionate.
Hey, listen, you've had your time. Let Mr. Hodges go.
Hey.
End of the movie. Cobbs is back with his daughter. It's a pan out, and we see a grizzled Hulk Hogan glaring at The Rock. And it turns out that he is also a Shaw.
What? Oh, man.
Oh, wait.
He's the father. He's Queenie's, like, lover that these children came from.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. I'm going to pitch another one.
I mean, Hogan I'm gonna is pitch very pretty, I'm, so it's plausible.
I'm pitching you another one. So you have Mr. Shimmy. You have another Shaw played by Hulk Hogan, right? Then you have this. Brian O'Connor has a brother.
Yeah.
Jeff O'Connor. And during the England scene, their car wrecks, right? And a car comes out of nowhere. An American car, American muscle car, pulls up.
Right.
And it is Jeff O'Connor, played by Sean William Scott, who has been in the rundown in Southland Tales with Dwayne Johnson.
Oh.
And he goes, "Get in here, guys!" And they jump in. And he takes them away on a chase scene and survives against Brixton, Idris Elba. You get one more, to be fair, Adam.
Okay, so here's the other one. We have our heroes, Hobbs and Shaw, learning to fight together for the first time down at the rainy rocks by the beach. Helicopters blown up. And then what happens is Idris Elba, he actually, even though they're working together, he overpowers them.
No.
They're starting losing again. And then out of nowhere is a wayward fist, comes out of the screen, clocks him in the jaw, but then immediately it's like, ah, and it's Johnny Knoxville, and the punch has hurt his own hand, and he's shaking it off.
Because he was, from Walking Tall. Because they were buds in Walking Tall.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Or that Jackie Chan movie.
Have you seen Skip Trace, Adam?
I haven't seen Skip Trace.
It's very fun.
Rennie Harlan, Jackie Chan, Johnny Knoxville. You need to watch it. Beautiful.
Right now, we'll watch that.
All right,
but also, I love Johnny Knoxville when he was in The Last Stand with Schwarzenegger, right?
Oh, we love The Last Stand. Best flare gun kill I've ever seen in my life. Can we just pick all of them?
What about this, though? Instead of it being a wayward punch, it's a flare hits Idris Elba in the side of the head.
Oh.
And he's the same character linking Last Stand into the Fast universe.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I have to go with my, as the studio executive here, with my number one henchman, Adam, because where Mark went wrong was Mark picked all his favorite actors and people and didn't appeal to my senses as an executive, and right. Adam nailed it.
Well, who do you pick? Which one?
The Johnny Knoxville one.
Well, I like that. That's a fun twist, though.
It was a very fun twist.
Yeah, that whole goal. Okay, what if we added all four?
I want to see CGI reverse aging love story between a young Hulk Hogan and a young Helen Mirren.
Oh my gosh. Wait, he's Dad Shaw?
Yeah.
Dad Shaw.
Well, no, Adam put it as her lover. We don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Adam, I will send you whatever Blu-rays you want if you make this poster with these characters.
Oh, it's coming, my friend. So do you want it to be a prequel called Dad Shaw?
Yes.
Where, how about this?
Dad Shaw. Why Dad Shaw?
Hogan is Statham's dad, but
Arthur
Shaw, his dad, who would be his dad?
Bruce Campbell.
No, stop making it about Bruce Campbell.
Kurt Russell.
No.
He's already a character in the world.
Oh, yeah. Eco Yue.
What?
No.
Keith David.
No.
John Cusack.
Clint Eastwood.
Yes! See?
Guy Pearce.
I don't understand. He's too young.
Dad Shaw. But wouldn't it be awesome if Sean William Scott joined the Fast World as Jeff O'Connor?
What if in 1983 there was a movie starring Helen Mirren, Hulk Hogan, Clint Eastwood, but it was essentially This Means War?
Any which way but fast?
Well, no, but like, you know, the Chris Pine and Tom Hardy. It's just that movie, but with those two and Helen Mirren.
It's a great
And she can't choose, so she has two babies.
I mean, I will watch anything with Helen Mirren.
Can we get Keith David in here somewhere?
Voiceover.
Voiceover.
He's the computer voice.
Oh, so he's the big boss. Mm-hmm. Wait, can he be Dad Brixton?
Yes.
Oh, I did it.
Or if the ages don't work out, he can be Uncle Brixton, and he raised Idris as a baby. And
right. He's the one who Idris goes to help them fix cars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to – I know I lost, and I cede to the better choice. Johnny Knoxville blowing up Brixton with a flare gun, thus uniting the Last Stand universe and a Walking Tall reunion. That's amazing. I just want to ask you, Adam. Bruce Campbell, rocket launcher, what's your happiness scale? Mr. Shimmy.
Oh, 10 out of 10.
Okay.
If that happened, I'm immediately screaming in the theater and looking for the other guy who's also screaming in the theater.
What about SWS popping up and being Jeff O'Connor?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Sean Scott is not as endeared to me as I feel he is to you.
Goon?
Goon is great. But it's great because I didn't expect it because it was Sean William Scott.
I guess I got a Sean William Scott thing.
You really do.
I would rather see it, his brother be played by Matthew Lillard.
Whoa. Oh. I like that. I'm a big ML fan. Now, I gotta say, yeah. I met.
What was he on? The Bridge?
Yeah, he was really good in The Bridge. Mm-hmm. He's a big dude. I met Sean William Scott. Megan's heard this story a billion times, but I met him on the set of American Reunion where I'm an extra on, and I'm pouring wine, the ADR dialogue, into my mouth, and I'm walking in the background, and I had a big role, and they cut down a lot of my role in that. Tara Reid comes up to me, starts talking. I got a lot of stuff cut out from that scene. And I was cut out mostly of Odd Life of Timothy Green, which is very disappointing for me. However, there's a lot of downtime. I've been a swim coach in Teen Wolf. I wasn't used. I was in Resurrection. I had a lot of screen time in that one. All right, but so I was talking to Sean William Scott on American Reunion, and he and I were chatting about the movie Bronson with Tom Hardy.
Right.
And he's just the nicest dude ever. Like, he was so nice, it threw me off. And then we just started chatting about art house cinema. And I was like, this is awesome. And that, like, yeah. we just kept it casual.
So that's what it is. Like, because you guys chatted.
I mean, I just played it cool. And I was so like, yo, man, goon. But I was like, yeah, dude, so like, yeah.
Mark is pulling a full Hollywood move here and just pitching his friend to the exec.
Yes, but he didn't go on the marketing move and pitch the things the execs would like best.
I'm going to say, Adam, your ideas are better than mine. You pitched big league ideas. I pitched AAA.
I don't like that sentence, Mark. I feel like that's a rift between us. First we got Captain America, now we got this.
We're friends, man. See, here's the thing. So we have a rift between that, but that's not like a one-upping. Like, if you come, I'm happy when my friends succeed. So if you pitch something better than me, I'm happy for you. There's no need to be annoyed because you succeeded. Like, I'm happy for you. The problem with our Tony Stark Captain America thing is there's no succeeding. It's just us kind of digging holes in the ground and then throwing stuff at each other. So there's no, like, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And so, you know, but I love how this movie ends, though, with Johnny Knoxville just blowing up Idris Elba.
I love that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
And Skip Trace, guys. Watch Skip Trace.
What did you watch it on?
Netflix.
Okay.
Rennie Harlan.
Okay.
All right.
So, Mark.
We got more about this movie.
Idris sings in the movie? Did you?
Yeah.
You got more info on that, right?
Yeah, so I listened to the commentary, and also David Leitch talked about this. And also, he cast, so the reason he cast, I did so much research on this movie, Adam.
I love it.
But I haven't used any of it, which is great, because I like having it in my reserve tank here. But so he cast Idris Elba just simply because he needed a guy that could fight Jason Statham and Dwayne Johnson believably. So Idris Elba, if you watch before, he's done documentaries about kickboxing. So he's actually a kickboxer. The guy is a legit athlete, and he also has a big screen presence. You know, you watch The Wire and other shows. I mean, he is just a legit presence on screen. Good luck, Charlie. Like, turn it up, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just threw that word out there because I like that show. So he cast him, and Idris comes like, hey, man, let me get a song in this. Because someone apparently said Idris only got cast if he could get a song, which wasn't true. So he had a song that David Leitch liked. And through the entire production, like, Idris made it his job to fine-tune that song to get it to where David... So David wasn't buying it. Idris, like A-list star. They want him to be Bond. He worked as hard as he could to impress David Leitch to get his song in.
Yeah, because it's playing behind one of the driving scenes, yeah,
the,
I think.
The Transformers motorcycle.
Oh, part. Yes, exactly.
And the thing with Leitch is...
But you sort of hear it and you go, that's interesting. That, is that Big Driss?
With Cypress Hill. But yeah, so well, the thing with Leitch and these guys, since everything's so stunt heavy, it needs to be choreographed. And so he picks right. his music far in advance. Mm-hmm. So his stuntmen and action scenes and VFX and previs can build action scenes around the song.
Hmm.
So he didn't want to include a new song into a movie because he already had it all in his head. So he wasn't doing it to be like, I don't like it. He's like, I already have every song and I have everything built around it. But Idris, being like the perfectionist he is, perfected the song and they put it in the movie. So it's not like even a toss-in. It's not like me tossing my boy Sean William Scott in this movie. It's,
right.
It's Idris working hard to get this song in there.
Okay, so it's over a scene that's not matched up to action, and then it's also in the credits.
Yeah, and so...
And it's called Even If I Die.
I'm buying it. So it's... It, so yeah, he fought hard to get it in.
He's pulling a full Swayze here who had songs on the Dirty Dancing soundtracks.
Oh my god, I did not know that.
He's pulling yeah, a they turn up Charlie they couldn't on
afford,
us.
Wow. They couldn't afford to buy music for it because they had such a budget. So Swayze's like, I got some songs. And then they put some of his music in Dirty Dancing.
That's cool.
Now, I have a question. Could Talk Brixton, Shaw... So, Megan, this is another inside joke. I apologize. Could Hobbs, Shaw, or Brixton withstand the punch that Swayze took in the classic podcast that we talked about? And I can't remember the name of the movie right now.
The name is Steel Dawn.
Steel Dawn. And it's one of our most popular episodes, and I can't remember it. But in that episode, we talked about a sand person punching Swayze so hard in the face that it looked like it would have taken his head off. Could right. any of these three people survive that from that sand
so
creature?
I think all of them could survive it, but I think the guy that would affect the least would be The Rock because he's got that Scorpion King pedigree.
Oh, yeah, because they both have the sand connection.
He knows how to desert fight.
Mm.
Yeah, desert fighting's a thing.
Yeah.
That's a great point. I love that.
Yeah, it's like, good. remember when Tekken 3 came out and there was Eddie Gordo and he did like the breakdance fighting?
Mm-hmm.
So there's also sand fighting.
Yep, you're right. And I mean, you can chuck really it in the eyes. You can kick it in the eyes. I love sand fighting because you can cheat a lot. You can just throw sand in people's
sand
eyes.
Sand is the worst.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to, well, actually, we have a Haywire Final Fight episode coming up and sand fighting did not work out well for Ewan McGregor. Mm-hmm. But he fought Gina Carano, so that's not fair.
Yeah, that's not going to work out in any venue.
Go to Final Fights, listen to that episode. Megan and I recorded it.
There's no version of this where you come out ahead.
No.
Mm-mm.
None.
Right?
They're all going to have a black eye, at least, from this punch. Now, where do you think that they filmed most of this film, Adam? Because Megan did a ton of research on this. Where do you think they shot most of it?
Wow. I want to... My mind tells me that...
Hey Adam.
So
my mind's telling me yes.
My mind tells me. So I want. There's part of it that says, did they make some like Eastern Europe country look like LA, or did they make like somewhere in the States look like, you know, the Middle Eastern or not the European like
yeah
scene? Because it's all over the world, right? Like they really go for places.
So where do you think? Where do you think?
I'm gonna go out on a limb here. Say Australia.
Mm. Australia. Magster.
What?
Where they shoot it?
Oh, mostly in England. So...
Because they had the budget. That's why.
Yeah, they had that money.
Yeah.
This was not a Dirty Dancing situation.
The Ukraine stuff was in the north part of England. I want to say somewhere around Manchester.
There's so much money, they didn't have to go to Ukraine, which is crazy.
In a defunct power plant.
Right.
And then the mansion that was Russian was in England.
Oh, yeah. And they recolored it. So it, in real life, it's a yellowy color. And this, it's almost like a, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a greeny sort of color.
It's color.
Or orange. I don't know.
They shot in London, Megan. That's expensive.
Yeah, they shot a bunch of the street chases in Glasgow.
Oh, yeah, you're right. In Scotland.
But it's the opposite of the situations where guys are like, we got to change the script because we have to shoot here.
We gotta go to Bulgaria.
Right. It's when Kenneth Branagh did Hamlet and he changed the time period and location because he can only film at like a certain castle.
Yeah.
Like, no way, guys. Dream big. We'll make it happen.
Yeah. You guys got $200 million for this movie. You can shoot in London.
Yeah.
But they used this movie, though. What I like about David Leitch.
They used McLaren.
Yeah, every movie. Yeah, like they went to McLaren and filmed. But this movie, right, Meg? It's every dollar seen on screen. Like, this isn't a movie where you're like, where did the budget go? You know where the budget went.
I have a cool tidbit about the pub.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Nice.
About where they shot. So the Carpenter's Arms is where you frequently see Declan Shaw hanging out. And I think his flat is either above it or near it or somewhere around there. Anyways, it's a nod. They actually did their research on this. It's a nod to London's gangster past.
Hey.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was once owned by the Cray brothers, who ran the underworld in the 60s. And the Cray brothers were the guys who were that movie The Legend was about.
Yeah,
Tom Hardy brothers.
Good bar fight.
Yeah.
So they used to own the Carpenter's Arms, and it's supposed to be a bit gangstery because he's a...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's sweet.
I thought that was very interesting.
And I have some facts that I just saw. Okay, Megan can attest. My note-making looks like a maniac's is scribbling.
I actually like it when you write in all caps because I can read those.
So I have all like pages and I have pages on my computer and in my notebook, but I have a couple cool things. So David Leitch is a huge fan of 13 Assassins, the Takashi Miike so film, which is one of Meg's and my favorite action films ever made. I mean,
It was the first DVD I bought because you told me to.
Oh my, yeah, isn't it incredible? Is it not?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pushing that movie since, what, 2011? For 10 years, I've been pushing that movie on everybody I see. And so at the end, they actually made a, like, kill box.
Including your cousin who thought we were talking about 13th Warrior.
Oh yeah, I made my cousin watch it and he thought we were going to watch 13th Warrior. I push this movie on everybody. Everybody. I buy this movie for people. All right, so 13 Assassins. David Leitch built scenes where there's like a kill box and he's like 13 assassins. Mm-hmm. So one of the greatest stunt coordinators, stuntmen, has been working in the industry forever, copies 13 assassins. That's like the proudest. I feel like a proud parent and I didn't even direct this movie.
It's good.
It's like, right. So what do you think about the movie, Adam, when I told you to buy it? Did it live up to the hype?
Yeah. No. So I bought it as almost payment because I made you watch Steel Dawn. I made you watch Young Blood,
mm-hmm.
and I made you watch Knight Riders.
Yep.
So I was like, I owe this guy something. And I also like really respect like your taste in movies and whatnot. So I was like, I walked into a Giant Tiger and I saw it there and it was in the bin. And I was like, what are the odds? And so I picked it up and I came home and I watched it. And the whole time I was like, I was sad because I wasn't watching it with you, Mark.
Aww.
I was like, this is great, but it'd be better. You know what? Like when you love a movie and you watch it with somebody and you get to see them experience it.
Yeah, that'd have been awesome.
That's what I wanted in my life.
But when everything breaks out, man, what'd you think?
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, it makes me so happy.
It's everything I've ever wanted in a movie. Like, it's the perfect combination and of like action and gore and style. Like, it's just perfect.
Are you going to do a 13 Assassins final fight?
Well, I would just do a whole ep. That movie's beautiful. Yeah. Now, like, okay, another interesting thing that I learned was that kiss between Hattie and Hobbs wasn't supposed to happen. They discussed it. They're like, should it happen? Should it not happen? But they're just talking about it. And Vanessa Kirby just, like, is instinctual. She's a great, like, British actress. So she just went for the kiss. Like, The Rock didn't know it was coming. She just kind of sensed it, and so she did it because she sensed the moment. And there's several moments in this film that she improvised on this. And I think, I don't know, I dig that. Like, I like that she went for it. She seems like a wild card actress anyway. I liked her a lot in Fallout. She kind of goes between kind of...
A little wild.
Yeah, there it is. A little wild and, like, really cool. But that kiss was... She popped it on Hobbs, and he didn't see it coming.
I want to say this, and Megan, I apologize if this offends you right from the get-go. Like, I'm sorry if this is. But I think that,
well, now I'm curious.
I think that in a situation, like later on in her life, if she was telling her grandkids, she was, yeah, I was on this movie scene, and I had a chance to kiss The Rock, and I didn't. I think that would be upsetting to, like, for generations to come. I think if you have the opportunity, you got to take it.
You gotta smooch The Rock.
I mean, if you're an actor, that's part of your life.
That's your job, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
And then also, when she spit into Idris's face, that was improvised.
Oh, I'm sure he loved
that.
Okay. Yeah, he didn't. Leitch didn't talk about the aftermath of that.
Interesting.
Now, how did you guys feel about the the speech where he's like, if she chooses to climb this mountain.
Oh, Mark hates
it. Oh, I don't like that scene.
It drove me nuts. I was like, this feels out of place.
It's very regressive. And then he's like, if she wants to do the horizontal Hulu, Hulu sexy, sexy time. Like,
so my take,
it's very regressive. And Megan and I had this talk on a walk, right?
It's out of place, like Adam said. But I think really what they're doing is they just are shit-talking each other to bother each other. So I don't know that he truly means it. Like, I don't believe he means it. I think he's trying to bother Shaw.
Yeah.
It was bothering by being Adam. An ass. That's what it was doing.
Yeah, well, it is. It's bothersome. No one likes that kind of talk.
And it bothered Adam. It bothered Mark. And I guess, you know, they use that word worrisome, but I think it's just more, like, he used the word horizontal Hulu sexy time, she wants to climb. He's, like, speaking for her, and it just felt very, like, 1980s regressive. And, well, I didn't like it.
In a character who prides himself on being very likable, it was the most unlikable thing that happened in the movie.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, that's, Megan, we had to talk about this Megan and I take walks, and we had this conversation about when we were prepping for this podcast. Like, I don't know. That's the one scene, because I don't like that he's speaking for her.
Like, no, it reminds me of high school locker talk.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, and there is a decent amount of that. Like, he uses the whoop-ass thing, and then, like, I would drag my balls. Like, it's like dragging my balls through broken glass. Like,
Do you think opening a can of whoop-ass was a shot on Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Wait, I thought whoop-ass was The Rock's.
No, that was Stone Cold.
Oh, maybe it was an homage. Because they're still friends, right?
Oh, yeah, they're buds.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he just references buddy. And it's kind of like that phrase is in the lexicon now, I would say. But they do that, though. Like, you know what else I didn't
There's
like?
There's a lot of shit talking.
I don't like when Dwayne Johnson's like, yeah, I'll get with your mom later. And it's like, come on, dude. Like, that's, like, if Statham said that to Hobbs, like, that would have been kind of messed up. But Statham's humor is more about, like, Statham's like, oh, that shirt's too tight on you, or you're stupid.
Right.
Like,
oh, that is such a funny scene.
And Hobbs gets visually, like when you see him, he gets very uncomfortable.
What's her name?
Yeah, Madame M's.
Madame M's mansion, and they both have on the tactical gear, and his vest is just too tight, and he pulls off a really good reaction, facial expression. I mean, The Rock is visibly uncomfortable that his vest is too tight. And it's kind of endearing.
Yeah, he looks kind of sad when Statham... Like, so I noticed in this movie, Hobbs wants to be Shaw's friend more than Shaw wants to be Hobbs' friend. Shaw's always trying to get rid of him, and Hobbs is always kind of hurt by it. So I kind of like that angle in Hobbs' character.
Hobbs, I guess, reluctantly rolls with a crew, typically.
Yeah.
He's either got his police force friends, or he's got the fast crew. Shaw's been on his own for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want to do it. Like, he keeps trying to lose Johnson, and Johnson looks really sad by it. It makes me happy. And you know, they got away with saying 3 F-bombs in this movie. So they got away with saying 2 because Statham and Johnson said it at the same time. And then the third one, they put the spider, like, they broke the glass and they put spider glass, like the, and then that's when he said the third one, when he mouthed it, he mouthed it in front of the broken glass that looked like a spider's web.
Hmm.
So they got away with saying more than one F-bomb in this movie, very tactically.
That's interesting.
You know what the best getting away with F-bomb is in the world?
X-Men, First Class.
No.
Oh, what?
Powerpuff Girls the movie.
Wait, what? There's an F-bomb in that?
Well, sort of. So they go to their first day of kindergarten, and then this, like, monster attacks. And so they destroy the town fighting him, and they destroy the school. So then they go back to their kindergarten class, and it's all, like, dilapidated. And everybody's angry at them. They're like, you Powerpuff Girls, and they're all upset. And the teacher tries to maintain some order, and they say, okay, girls, can you recite the alphabet? And all 3 Powerpuff Girls go A, B, C, D, E. And the roof collapses in, and they go F. It's adorable.
That's cute.
Yeah, that's a good stealth F-bomb right there. That's a legit, that's like a real F-bomb.
Yeah, they did it. And I was like, that's amazing.
Now, a couple more questions before we get out of here. How uncomfortable did Dwayne Johnson look in that stealth parachuting outfit?
I feel like they looked uncomfortable. Both of them looked uncomfortable all the time in their outfits.
Really?
Yeah.
Even the turtlenecks?
Except for the opening scene. I don't see any of these, either of these guys being comfortable.
Wow, that's interesting. You need to do a video essay on that.
Okay.
So there's a lot of easy sells. There's a lot of easy no's and yeses tonight. No.
Yeah, I don't agree.
all right, and then let's see. Actually, that was it. That's all I really wanted to know, if they looked really uncomfortable. Any other final thoughts about this movie, Meg? Or Adam?
I just said I think that in a franchise where the stakes are constantly being upped and the rules are being rewritten all the time, that I can't wait for Hobbs and Shaw 2 or Hobbs and Shaw or 2 Hobbs 2 Furious, whatever they're going to call it.
Dad Shaw.
Dad Shaw.
That's the prequel.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm working on a poster right now. And so before you get your slumber tonight, there will be a Dad Shaw poster in your inbox.
Yes.
Can we now? If I sent you an extra money, could we get a Knoxville one too?
So you want like a Johnny Knoxville poster as well?
Well, like in the final fight, Knoxville come. Like, could you even make that work? Is there a way to even do that?
I can make a still image of Knoxville in that final fight. But the Dad Shaw poster is a prequel movie.
Oh, I love it.
Of a young Helen in the 70s with Hogan and Eastwood after her.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Fantastic.
All right, I love it. I can't wait to see this. Megan, final thoughts?
I think we didn't have a chance to give enough credit to... There's so many funny lines, you know.
What's the turkey line he says?
Ooh, what's the turkey line?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
He says it in the car. Hold on.
What lines do you like, Meg, while he's hunting them down?
You know, who are you, bad guy?
Yeah, bad guy.
If you can't break out of a shitty prison, you must be slipping.
Yeah.
Says that to the mom. When they're going into one of the fights, not going in there. I dreamt they killed you. I'm pretty disappointed.
So it's when Brixton is chasing him on the motorbike. And Luke Hobbs says, they're in the McLaren, he says, do you mind telling me just what in the fresh turkey hell we're dealing with here?
Oh, I'm just glad he doesn't talk about beating somebody like a Cherokee drum.
Oh.
Yeah, and then Deckard Shaw replies, it's a long story.
I don't remember that. That's funny.
Yeah, no, I dig this film. It's a lot of fun.
Wait, I had one last funny
sorry.
Line.
Sorry, Meister.
The best one of them all.
Yeah.
Genocide, schmenicide.
Oh, that's the best. And I have in large notes somewhere around here. Where do I have that? Oh, there it is, right there. All caps on top, so I didn't miss it. And I still missed it. I have so many notes.
I also want to say, but my final thought is that it's the best use of the tied up hostage trope of like buying time.
Oh, yeah, the 5 instead of 3.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pummel that guy in the face.
Oh, yeah. There and again, some really funny lines in that scene.
Well,
yeah. He yells at him.
He yells at him, why did you say that? Because they get electrocuted. Like, felt good in the moment. Probably shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what? Jason Statham was waiting for him to wake up. And he's like, you got a full 8 hours there, sweetheart. That's the longest 45 minutes, actually, too, when they set that. And they set that timer in the most obvious place. No, I'm complaining. But this was fun, guys. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for letting us just go all over.
This is a wild and willy episode.
It was a lot of fun.
I can't. Yeah, this is fun. That's what happens when you bring Adam on.
Ooh, we talk about Peter Rabbit and have fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Mark was doing a podcast the other night, and guess what was on the TV?
Peter Rabbit.
Peter Rabbit, and I watched it, and I thought of you guys.
How many ribs are broken?
All of them.
I missed out. All right, cool. All right, well, this was fun. Thank you, guys.
No problem, Mark.
So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Mo and Hodge, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.